Now our study today takes us into that famous chapter, Hebrews chapter 11. I want to read just some of the opening verses of the chapter. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen, for by it the elders obtained a good report. Through faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that things which are seen were not made of things which do appear. By faith Abel offered unto God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, by which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts, and by it he being dead yet speaketh. Sure the Lord will bless to us the reading of these verses. Now, as you look at Hebrews chapter 11, it has well been termed the Hall of Fame. For here in this chapter, we see the pilgrim heroes. These pilgrim heroes are traveling along the great pilgrim highway. Now there's an entrance to it, and the entrance appears like an archway. The columns represent the past and the present as they relate to faith, and the arch points on to the future with confidence in the Word of God. In the closing section of chapter 10, there were exhortations to faith, hope, and love. These three graces are developed in the remaining chapters. Chapter 11 is devoted to the great truth of life lived on the principle of faith. Chapter 12 deals with hope, and chapter 13 with the great theme of love. The key to the understanding of the teaching presented in chapter 11 is the statement taken from chapter 10, verse 38, "Now the just shall live by faith." Keep that in mind now, the just shall live by faith. We pointed out in previous studies that statement is found in the Old Testament in the prophecy of Habakkuk. It's found again in the Epistle to the Romans written by Paul, and in the Epistle to the Galatians, and here again in the Epistle to the Hebrews. But if you were to examine the three places where it is found, you'll discover that the emphasis falls upon three different sections of the statement. For example, the just shall live by faith. In Paul's great thesis called the Epistle to the Romans, he's dealing with a man being justified with God. He's showing how that the guilty man can be brought back into a true relationship with his God and be justified with God. So the emphasis falls upon the just. The just shall live by faith. But when he comes to the Epistle to the Galatians, the great argument there is the controversy between faith and works. Some wanted to introduce works as necessary for the obtaining of salvation. That is, it was necessary for them to have certain works before they could be justified with God. These were false teachers. False teachers then, just the same as we're false teachers today. But Paul was writing that letter to combat the false teaching, and the emphasis there is laid on faith. The just shall live by faith, in contrast to the works. Now here, when you come to the epistle to the Hebrews, the emphasis falls on shall live. The just shall live by faith. A lot of people feel that they want faith to die with. Here in the epistle to the Hebrews chapter 11, it's faith to live with. The just shall live by faith, which simply means he's setting forth here the life that is lived on the principle of faith, and he's going to prove it. But now, in introducing this great message of Hebrews 11, he first of all tells us what faith is. He says, now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Let me try and illustrate that to all my listeners today. Suppose, just by way of example, that you had some friend who left you in their will. They had some real estate, some property to leave you, but it wasn't here in the area where you're living. It was away in another part of the country. You had never seen the real estate. You had never seen the house, but you were left in the will. And the lawyer came to you and told you that your friend had left you in this will, and you now were the possessor of some property. And now you were telling your friends about your possession, and someone said, have you seen it? You said, no, I haven't seen it, but I've been told about it. But then, if you haven't seen it, how do you know that it's there? Oh, you say, I've already been given the title deeds. I hold the title deeds in my hand, and the title deeds give to me the absolute assurance, and I have these title deeds, and I have the authority to go and take possession of my possessions. They're mine by right, legally mine, I have them. But says someone to you, suppose there's no such place. Just suppose now that that real estate does not exist. What are you going to do? You say, now look here, I hold in my hand the title deeds, and in the deeds they tell me exactly the amount of land that has become mine, and the kind of property that is erected on it. It's mine legally, and someday I'm going over to possess it. I'm going to live in that place. I hold the title deeds. You'd be justified, wouldn't you? But you had never seen it. Faith is the substance. Faith is the ground or confidence. You remember we emphasized in a previous study, cast not away therefore your confidence. Now faith is the ground or the confidence. It's the title deeds, if you like. It's the foundation for your belief. It's the substance of things hoped for. It's the evidence of things not seen. Faith then lays hold upon that which is still future. Faith lays hold upon things which the natural eye hasn't yet seen. But faith, you remember, cometh by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. Faith is that which we exercise towards God. It's faith in God. So therefore faith is the substance of things hoped for. It's the evidence of things not seen. You know, it's better to believe God than to place confidence in man. Yet each of us, in some way or another, we place confidence in different people. If you're sick, you place confidence in the doctor. You allow the doctor to examine you, and then when the doctor gives you a prescription, which you can't read, you believe it. You take it along to the pharmacist, and when the pharmacist hands you your bottle of medicine, you have confidence in him that he's given you the right thing. He's given to you what the doctor prescribed. And if you're wise, you go home and you take the medicine that the doctor prescribed and the pharmacist dispensed. You take your medicine. But suppose now there was a case where you had that medicine and you were sick. And someone said to you, what are you going to do about it? You've been to the doctor. You obtained the prescription. You took that to the pharmacist. You got the medicine. What are you going to do with it? You said, I don't know. I've got no confidence in the medicine. That simply means you have no confidence in the pharmacist, and you have no confidence in the doctor, so therefore you have no faith in any of them. But on the other hand, if you say to whoever questions you, yes, I have confidence in my doctor, I have confidence in the pharmacist, I have got confidence in this medicine, and I'm going to take it, and I shall be cured. And you take it, and it has the desired effect. You exercise faith. You see, all of us exercise faith of some kind, but now, this faith that's mentioned here in Hebrews chapter 11 is faith in God. It's faith in a God we've never seen. We've got confidence in things hoped for. None of us have ever been to heaven and come back again. And even the Apostle Paul, in describing it, said, he saw things and heard things that could not be expressed in human language. No, my friend, we've never been there. But we read it in the Word of God, and faith cometh by hearing, and hearing by the Word of God. And while it has never entered into the heart of man, the things that God hath prepared for them that love him, these things have been revealed by the Spirit of God. Here we have the Word of God. And so therefore, we have confidence in the things that are hoped for, and faith gives the evidence of things not seen. Now, to prove his point, he says, for by it the elders obtained a good report. If you go back then throughout the Old Testament, you'll discover that man, generation after generation, exercised faith in God and obtained a good report. Those that have gone on before us, great men of God, were men of faith. Therefore we can follow on in their footsteps. Now he applies it in a very practical way. He says, through faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the Word of God, so that things which are seen were not made of things which do appear. That takes us back to creation. Now then, this brings us face to face with some great problems at the present time. You know, there are people who do not believe that God created this world. Now, I'll ask you one question. If God didn't create this world, then who did? If there's no creator, then how did the world come into existence? It's obvious that this thing didn't just happen. There had to be a creator before you could have a creation. See, this creation, and this earth on which we live, is so complicated that it demands a mastermind behind it. Who could ever set this world to go round on its own axis once a day? Who was it that set the earth in motion so that it could go in orbit round the sun and never go out of orbit? Who was it that controlled these things, the day and the night? Who is it that controls the seasons? Who is it that has this old world in the hollow of his hand? Why, it's the mighty Creator. And if people are not prepared to bow to the thought of God being a Creator, then I ask them in all fairness, Where did these things come from? See, by faith, we understand that the worlds were framed by the Word of God. You see, he's taking the ages as they roll along, and God has set the framework. God is never taken by surprise. You and I may change our form of government in the country. Other countries have changed. Some have moved from monarchies to dictatorship and so on. But suppose man thinks that he's changing the world, let me remind you, my friend, God has framed these things. The worlds were framed, the ages were framed by the Word of God, so that things which are seen were not made of things which do appear. So therefore we come to this point, that by faith we know these things. Now, he introduces, as it were, a man from the Old Testament. You'll notice he does not introduce Adam. There may be reasons for that. But he starts off with one who was born in the first generation. He is one of the sons of Adam. And he says, by faith, Abel offered unto God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, by which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts, and by it he being dead yet speaketh. So he introduces as his first witness here the name of Abel. Remember then the text, the just shall live by faith. Abel is a picture of faith worshipping God. There are three things I might mention with regards to Abel. First of all, his approach to God. The second thing is his acceptance by God. And the third thing is his approval by God. Now, his approach to God was commended. He approached God according to the way that God had made known, and his sacrifice was more excellent than the sacrifice that was offered by his brother Cain. Now you see, Cain and Abel were the first two that were born of Adam and Eve. They weren't the only two, of course. Adam and Eve had many sons and many daughters. But Cain and Abel were the first two. And it says, by faith Abel offered unto God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain. But remember, Cain was older than Abel. Cain was the firstborn. Yet, there came the day when these two young men approached God in order to make sacrifice. I want you to notice very carefully now that Cain made a sacrifice. Cain was not a heathen man. Cain was a man who believed there was a God. And he came in order to make sacrifice to God. And Cain did not believe in a multiplicity of gods. Cain knew that there was one God. And the fact of the matter is, he came to offer to God. Here is what the Word of God says. And in process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Lord. And then it tells you about Abel and what he brought. Now you see, Cain was a man who made a certain approach to God. But the sacrifice that he brought was not right. He didn't come with the correct sacrifice. If he was going to worship God, he thought that God should accept his worship, even although it was not according to the revealed will of God. But Abel came, and in his approach to God, he brought the correct sacrifice. Abel offered unto God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain. Plain words, his approach to God was right, and his approach to God was commended. I would like to ask you, my friend, what do you think is the proper way of approaching God? As you prepare to approach God and worship God by the way that His Word has revealed, you see, there is only one way of approach to God that can be commended. We've been studying that throughout the whole of the Hebrews. Because that this man has made one sacrifice for sins forever. And the only correct way of approach to God is by way of the cross, by way of receiving Jesus Christ. But now we have his acceptance by God, God testifying of his gifts. God accepted what Abel brought. Ask yourself, how did God testify of Abel's gifts? There's only one way. Now Cain, the older brother of the two, he knew that God had accepted Abel's sacrifice, and he also knew that God had rejected his. The only way that God could testify of Abel's gifts was by fire. Do you remember reading concerning Elijah when he was on Mount Carmel? He said to the Israelites, "The God that answereth by fire, let him be God." That was the way in which the sacrifices were consumed. They were laid on the altar and they were burned upon the altar. Now then, Cain and Abel approached God. They both came at the same time, professedly to do the same thing. Cain brought of the fruit of the ground, and remember the ground had been cursed, and the fruit of the ground was more or less the results of his own labors, and he brought this and offered it to God, but God's fire did not consume it. But Abel, he brought of the firstlings of his flock. And as he brought the firstlings of his flock, presented it to God, it was received by God, it was accepted by God, and Abel was accepted on the basis of an acceptable sacrifice. By faith, Abel offered unto God. Now then, remember this, the just shall live by faith. Here was a life that was lived on the principle of faith. So it's obvious, he was instructed. Someone must have told him the correct approach to God. And the only person, no doubt, who could instruct him was his father, Adam. Now, let me throw back again on something I have said. When Adam and Eve realized they had sinned and rebelled against God, they found themselves naked and they were ashamed. They tried to hide from God. But when God clothed them, he clothed them with coats of skin. See, Adam and Eve knew then that before they could have an acceptance with God, there had to be a sacrifice. And so this is the instruction, no doubt, that was given to their sons. Abel listened to what he was told. He was enlightened. And he went according to the teaching he received. And so therefore he brought his sacrifice to God by faith, knowing that this was what God expected, what God demanded, and Abel simply submitted himself to what he was told, and by faith he came and made his offering. And his offering was more excellent than that which was offered by Cain. Now Cain also would be instructed, but Cain decided that he was not going to come in God's way, he would come in his own way, and God would just have to accept him the way he came, but God didn't. You cannot play fast and loose with the things of God. And so Abel approached God and was commended. We have his acceptance by God, and that was certified because God testified of his gifts. And as I have indicated, Abel was accepted on the basis of the sacrifice. And that's the only way that you and I can be accepted, on the basis of the perfect sacrifice of Christ. Then there was his approval by God, and that is continued. For it says, "He being dead, yet speaketh." See, God placed Abel's testimony on record. And here it is said here, he being dead, yet speaketh. In plain words, the message is still carried on. So therefore we have one here in the very beginning of human history who exercised faith in God, and his life was lived on the principle of faith. I ask you, my friend, what about you? Have you ever thought of that old hymn, Faith of Our Fathers, living still in spite of dungeon, fire and sword? Oh, how our hearts beat high with joy whene'er we hear that glorious word, Faith of Our Fathers, holy faith, we will be true to thee till death.